So I'm Charlotte Booth from the Institute for Family Development, and I want to welcome you here today. It's such an incredible gathering here. It's kind of like Summer of Love, City of San Francisco, the gathering of the tribes. Remember those? That's kind of what it reminds me of. I want to thank you so much for coming, especially those of you who made the big trek from the East Coast, even red-eyeing in last night, some of you. And even more, I want to thank those of you who volunteered to actually do something as panelists. Nobody, that was a hard part. We all want to be here, but getting to work, that's kind of hard. So as you know, this event is co-sponsored by the National Family Preservation Network and the Institute for Family Development. And on behalf of both of those organizations, I want to express our heartfelt gratitude, Patrick, to the Annie E. Casey Foundation for funding us today, and also to the IFD Board of Trustees, because they also have provided funding for our event. Marcella. Thank you. Thank you. So we're here today to celebrate and document what I believe to be the most brilliantly conceived and executed systems change effort to ever take place. Joyce, come on over. I do believe it is the most brilliant conceived and executed systems change effort that I've ever even heard about. And Frank and I were talking the other day, and we both agree we haven't heard of another one, let alone had the honor to be part of something like this. So it's a very special day for me. So we've been calling this an IFPS initiative or national initiative because we kind of couldn't decide what to really call it. And I didn't like that. So the other day I was looking through the dictionary, and I thought, nah, that doesn't do it. So then I went to the thesaurus, and I thought, aha, reformation and revolution are much better matches for what I think expresses the magnitude of the kind of change that took place and the efforts that we've made. So while a major purpose today, and I'm going to talk fast because we're late now, a major purpose today is to celebrate the past, to chronicle what happened, particularly between the mid-80s to mid-90s. As I've been talking to many of you, in the last several months, what I realized is that not a lot of you really know what's happening today with IFPS and with home builders. So for many of you, the last contact, perhaps, that you had was in mid-90s, 92 to 95 kind of period. So although Shelley's going to, and of course, the mid-90s began what we think of as the dark era. It kind of lasted for about 10 years based on some misinterpretations, I believe, of research. We went into kind of a downswing. So even though Shelley's going to talk about this a little bit later today, I wanted to just start out by saying that IFPS and home builders are alive and well. And as a matter and in fact, on an upswing with the new interest in evidence-based work that's going on across the country. And as a matter of fact, today in the room with us, we have some people who are the new generation of leaders who have just begun or about to begin their own IFPS journey. So I wanted to just say that we have Doris Tolliver from Indiana, where there's been an implementation. There you go. And Deborah Portia Usher from D.C., just a hand up. And Nell Oquan from, Louisiana. Nell? So I'm hoping that some of you old-timers who've kind of been through this before, state coordinators and all, state leaders, might catch up with those three sometime during the day and see if they needed any support or help, or if you have any kind of words of wisdom to share with them, that'd be great. So I've been talking to lots of you in preparation for today, and in addition to realizing that a lot of people lost touch in the mid-90s, I also realized that nobody except, I think, Peter knows all the moving parts, knows really what took place to pull this huge initiative off. That although there was immense coordination that happened between all the efforts, I wonder, those of you who are working in policy, did you really know what the social work educators were doing? Do you know what the researchers were doing? That there's a lot of missing pieces to that. So, of course, how could we know? You know, it'd be almost impossible to know unless you were at the beginning of it. There have been so many people, so many agencies, so many universities. As a matter of fact, in your packet, On the left-hand side, about three pages back, there's a little document that, lists the key players in this initiative. And as you look at that, you'll be astounded by the number of organizations. They're in alphabetical order, not in order of importance, or in order of when they came into play. And that is one thing that I hope we can capture today, and maybe afterwards, is because I would like to develop a chronology. Peter was telling me the other day that he had a vision for which pieces had to come into play before the next one could come and the next one could come. So there was a chronology here that I just don't know enough about. Some of our publications tell us, but I think it was Joanne Edgar and I were saying that an awful lot of stuff that got published, especially through Clark, there's no dates on anything. So it's really been hard to kind of figure out when things happened. And there's also a list of the states that have been most key. There were an original set of six states, but there's lots of other states that we've worked closely with who are also doing high-quality work. And then the universities. Again, I think that most of you may not have known how many universities were involved in the various projects, and you'll hear about a couple of those today. So Peter said to me the other day that this was like a giant multi-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. So that is what we're about, is we're going to put the pieces together again, if we can, today. One thing I'm sure that will come up sometime today is the backlash that we all experienced. It was really pretty incredible, and actually still going on. Any of you who follow the Miami Herald, or maybe saw Richard Wexler's wild response to the Miami Herald, know. And so while that backlash has been really painful sometimes, because it sometimes got very personal for those of us in home builders, it actually is a sign of success. That you have to take it as a sign of great success, because it means that we changed things. Things really were changing, and the things that were changing were fundamental enough to threaten various kinds of systems. So it threatened, I think, fundamental beliefs about how you help families, about how practitioners should behave. And it threatened funding streams for what were then the large institutions that were warehousing our kids. So I think, again, the reason that the backlash was there is because in so many ways IFPS and the whole initiative was way ahead of its time. And today, at the very last part of the day, we're going to talk about the threads that you can see of what began with IFPS and how they've probably been part of the 4E waivers, part of kinship care movement, part of family team decision making, several others, the alternative response systems or differential response. There's a lot there. But in terms of the systems level, that we the very concept of keeping these families together was very fundamentally different. We all believed in family, but not those families. So the idea that you could do that was challenging, as Ray Kirk said, it challenged the fundamental belief system of our child welfare system. I think another thing that was very different was following a specific model. Now, today, we're all into following models. Everybody thinks that's a good thing to do. But at that time, it was a time when therapy was art, not science, right? And the models were seen as rigid. And not. And everybody said, not in my community. Maybe it works in yours, but not in mine. There was also a focus on building an evidence base, which, again, was very unusual in those days. And from the beginning of trying to do research and program evaluation, and of course, now that's quite common. And we talked then about saturation. Remember about the importance of if you were really going to see a true effect from your intervention, from your initiative, you had to get some kind of level of saturation. Now they call it going to scale. And Courtney O'Malley the other day from the Clark Foundation was telling me they think they invented that, you know, just recently, right? So, and at the clinical level, I think there were also things about home builders that challenged people and made the backlash happen. One was making family engagement the clinician's responsibility. That's very different at the time. And now I think we all, I mean, a big movement nationally on engagement to families, that we recognize that that is our job. Also requiring that families be involved in goal setting and in their treatment plan so that they were partners with you right from the beginning in that effort. The idea of professional clinicians, master's level clinicians, going into families' homes in bad neighborhoods was, 24 hours a day, flex time, was kind of shook a lot of people, and there was a lot of resistance to that it was demeaning to a professional to behave in that way. the delivery of hard services was another thing that hadn't really been happening in conjunction with clinical work until then. And finally, the involvement of the extended family, the neighbors, kin, whoever could support that family and bringing them into the intervention was very different at the time. We were all worried more about confidentiality, and now if the client wants them there, we want them there, was a new kind of concept. So there was lots that needed to change, lots of attitudes and beliefs needed to change about keeping families together. Both at the public level, and today Joanne Edgar is going to help us out a little bit with trying to talk about what was done in the media to try to get the public to not fight back against this. Federal and state policy had to change. Funding streams had to change, and they still need more changing. Skills of the workforce had to change, and we'll be talking about the social work education projects in relation to that. The willingness to follow a model had to change, and the judiciary had to be brought in. And Peter might be willing to share a few stories about how hard that was at times. So when Frank Farrow and I were talking about this recently, he laughed in the backlash. He said, maybe we should have named this Child Savers instead of IFBMs. Maybe then it would have been easier. So I think it's important that we continue to say to everyone that for those of us doing this work, this has always been about what's best for children, always. That we believe a child has a fundamental right to grow up in his own family, her or his own family, whenever it's possible to do that. Our dearly recently departed friend, Maya Angelou, who wrote a beautiful foreword to this book, Keeping Families Together, The Case for Family Preservation, told her story in a very powerful and moving way. And I'm hoping, since this was published by a friend, that we'll get permission to scan it and put it on the website that we have. But one thing, one sentence that of hers that strikes me in particular is, how is it possible to convince a child of his own worth after removing him from a family which is said to be unworthy, but with whom he identifies? So that's what our work is about. So I'm going to close now, except the housekeeping stuff, by saying that although we want to document the past, this is not really just about the past. What we want to do is we create a blueprint, because we think of Peter as a master architect. We're trying to think of an architect of a movement, and that we want a blueprint or a roadmap for the policymakers of today, and that just those of you in the States today, so that they can learn how to move forward. Judge Fitzgerald, who couldn't be here today because he's sailing the bridges in the Virgin Islands, on a catamaran they rented 6 months ago with three generations, so I guess it's okay. So what he said is, the current generation needs to know the obstacles we overcame, the strategies we used, and how this important change initiative was able to succeed. Or as Peter said just the other day, I'm not happy with the state of science or lack of it for social change. People need to learn how to do this.